Welcome, everyone, to the Cup of Coffee podcast with me, your host, Tom Dillon. This has been recorded live at our weekly online meeting and broadcast around the world. Today's topic is growing and running a UK property portfolio from outside the UK. Part two, avoiding bear traps with Julie Talbot. That might be our longest ever title for a podcast episode. Frankly, it needs work, but it does do what it says. It's a bit Ron Seal, does what it says on the tin. Other wood stain varnishes are available. And so we're off to a good start, I'd say. With regards, Julie is an expat who is now more of a digital nomad traveling around the world with her family, world schooling their children whilst carrying on growing a UK property portfolio from outside the UK. So I'd say we've balanced there, possibly the longest title in history with possibly the shortest bio, which is a lovely way to start the day, stroke weekend, stroke whatever time it is when where you're listening. Good morning, Julie.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on. How are you, Tom?
Very well indeed. Back by popular demand. Julie, so what have you been up to and so on? I'm not very good at this.
I was thinking back, it was 2021 when I was last speaking to you on here, wasn't it? And it was like a lifetime ago. And like last week, I couldn't quite believe it was nearly 3 years when I checked the date. So since then, been carrying on doing everything that we've been doing then, really. We were living in Abu Dhabi then. The kids were in conventional school and, I was just, doing the property stuff. And then in January 2022, that was when kind of the big life change happened. That's when my husband sort of like decided to retire. And we went, since then we've been traveling the world, although we've not made it out of Asia yet. We just seem to love it around here so much. So we're sort of jumping around the different countries on tourist visas, sort of homeschooling the kids / world schooling the kids / unschooling them. Like, I don't really know what you'd call it. And really just repeating the, using the kind of like systems and ways of working that I spoke about in the last podcast, really, just keep moving forward. So we've done 17 projects when I spoke to you. We're now on 43 projects, some of which are ours, some of which are, owned by investors and clients and things like that. And just now nomading it rather than expatting it, really.
That's going to sound like a stupid question, but have you noticed much of a difference? I suppose, you've probably noticed the difference in terms of fact you're in different places a lot. But have you noticed much of a difference in terms of how that's thinking about property here, how that's affected projects, managing things, or do you set up things in such a way that not really, it's the same thing, just happened to be on a boat occasionally?
Yeah, not really, to be honest, because, from Abu Dhabi, I didn't fly back to the UK to do anything on property. So we had to like focus on setting up the model, setting up how to do everything without being in the UK. And now we're not in the UK. I've actually got less time now than I used to have when I was an expat, because then the kids were in school, right? So aside from holidays and rain days, I didn't necessarily use all of that school time on the property business, but that was like time each day, should we say, that was technically available. Whereas now, school really takes a very small part of time. We're more like exploring and things like that. So time spent on the property business has diminished. But crazily, we've actually, done so much more over the time that we've been traveling. I almost think that Mark and I were sort of talking about this in our breakout room a few minutes ago, that I think whatever your lifestyle is, you just sort of find a way to make it work and find a way to do what you need to do. If you've got a big enough why and a big enough goal, then you just find a way to do it. So, nothing in terms of how we do things, nothing's really changed whilst we're traveling, other than we carry everything that we've got on our backs and, we've got less time.
Well, seems like a balance. I was reflecting. I should have given Julie more of a big up. For those who don't know, Julie's work there's lots of, for a start off, she had the most reaction of anyone in our Cooper group. By the way, if anyone is listening to the podcast, if you were to attend a meeting, you'd be more than welcome to join our very active WhatsApp group, which has currently about 260 active members on it. So if you're interested in managed to property, I'd recommend that, just if only for that benefit itself. But within that WhatsApp group, Julie's had the most excitement, I think, of any of our attendees. And certainly our previous podcast is one of our most listened to, hence, well, that was part of the reason to get back on, other than the fact this is also one of my heroes, in the sense that she well, you're about to hear from her, obviously, but the thing she achieves with, well, mostly from a mobile phone, is makes most people's what they achieve with large desktop screens and full time engagement with the process look, including mine, by the way, look insignificant. So I think it's that's one of the many reasons why Julie's a great person to listen to, because you know, I think you're likely to learn something about how to achieve what most people I speak to want to achieve, which is often around time freedom or freedom of some kind, whether it's freedom from a job, wherever it might be. And I'm not like everyone's got problems, I imagine, including Julie, but not least Bears where she is at the moment, but those kind of things. I think there's a lot to learn from what Julie's got to say. Speaking of which, what have you got to share with us today, if anything?
I've got a few things to share with you today. And I would definitely echo what you just said there, Tom. If anyone's listened to the podcast on the recording, not live, and you've not shown up to one of the meetings, like, why the heck not? And come along one Saturday, whatever time zone you're on, and join the breakout rooms. I learned so much from the breakout rooms. It's, you know, it's a really, really great, really, really great time investment. So, yeah, come along. So I'm going to talk about five things today. Last time I spoke to you, I said I was going to talk about five things, and I kind of added one as a bonus / miscounted. Who knows what the truth is? But today, unless I miscount again, it's going to be five bear traps to avoid, I suppose, if you want to grow your portfolio in the UK from out of the UK. Last time it was about five or six things to do to make it work, and here it's about five things not to do to make it work. So the first bear trap, I suppose, is not knowing what freedom is actually really important to you, is actually most important to you. And because if you don't know what freedom is most important to you, then it's kind of gonna make it harder to make decisions. So what do I mean? The conventional path, I suppose, that we all are aware of, and that I used to think was the only way to do it, was to get financial freedom first, and then once you've got financial freedom, then you're allowed to get time freedom and or location freedom, right? So, you know, build your financial freedom, and then you can travel the world, spend time with people who you want to be with, and that's like the conventional route. It's what the FIRE, the financial independence retire early, you know, movement is all about. And I had like a 7-year kind of like gap in my property portfolio whilst we lived in Abu Dhabi, because I think I kind of like bought into that you had to get financial freedom first before you were really able to do the whole time freedom and locational freedom. And I think so that the bear trap for me is know what type of freedom you want. If you've got the itch, right, the location freedom itch, or that wanderlust bug, then you can put having location freedom first and then grow your property portfolio whilst you are living wherever you want to live in the world. And if you want time freedom at the same time, then you can. And if you put those two things first, it actually makes it much easier for you to make decisions about how you do things in your business. And you can have those things whilst you build towards financial freedom. So if financial freedom is your absolute focus, then you might not be bothered about how much time you spend on doing property. You might be happy to trade a few years, you know, a few years to actually build it. But if location freedom is your priority, and it was for me, I remember being back in the UK in my mid-20s in like a corporate team building type of meeting, and you had the icebreaker thing, and the icebreaker activity was draw a picture of your life, of how you want your life to be. And I was like eye rolling, thinking I don't want to be in this meeting. Although it was an amazing job and I had a fantastic career, like it was a textbook perfect job, really, it just wasn't, I realized it wasn't what I wanted, and I didn't know what to draw, because I thought anything that I draw is going to give me away is like not wanting to be here. And I remember drawing like a world and a surfboard, because that was the only thing that I wanted to do. Like I thought, travel the world and surf my way around the world. And at the time, I just couldn't see a way of doing it. So if you've got that like itch, that kind of bug, then, you know, you can move overseas. You can become an expat. You can take a virtual job. And then whilst you're overseas, you can still grow a portfolio if you want to. And if you want location freedom and you're not that bothered about time freedom, then you can be, you know, growing your portfolio from a mountaintop or a... or a beach or whatever, working as many hours as you need to. So you don't necessarily need to systemize as much. If time freedom isn't important to you, one of the people who I've been working with this year as a mentee, Tom from Ocean Property Solutions, he has this year, at the start of this year, become a digital nomad, and he's now doing awesome things in temporary accommodation and scaling his business from, well, Thailand, parts of Asia. Every time I speak to him, he's in a different country. But you know, location freedom is most important to him, and he's finding a way to make it work. So if time freedom is your most important thing, then that means that you just need to choose a different way of working, whether you're in the UK or outside of the UK. But you would be putting in systems and things now rather than doing the thing yourself and then putting in systems afterwards. And this is sort of what Mark and I were talking about in the breakout room. Like, when you're overseas, it's kind of like your superpower, because you've got to find a different way of getting everything done. Your hands are tied behind your back almost, because you can't just drive around to your property and do something. You can't just do your own viewing. You've got to find another way. So the bear trap that I've found is if you don't know your freedom, the freedom that's most important to you, you're not necessarily going to make progress. And I thought that financial freedom had to be the first thing that you got before you could get time and location freedom. And that caused me to pause for 7 years. And then when I kind of just like realized, actually, you can have location freedom first and grow your property portfolio, then I started to make progress and just find a different way of doing things. So that's the first thing, know your freedom. The second bear trap is not being ultra confident in what you're doing. I speak to many, you know, expats and, you know, sometimes digital nomads, and for people who live outside of the UK, buying UK property and you know, just earning an income from property is something people want to do. And when you're an expat, you know, lots of people will tell you that you have to buy a new build off plan, because that's the only way you can do it. But you need to be, I found, if you're not really confident and really, really clear on exactly what it is you're doing, then we don't make progress. We have this like desire to want to do something in property, but we don't actually move forward. Like the miles somehow just somehow stop us. And by being ultra confident, what I mean is, you know, knowing what it is you want to buy, as in what type of house, what type of tenant it is you want to go in, what area is it that you're buying in, and what model of growing your portfolio are you using? Are you doing it yourself? Are you joint venturing? Are you using a sourcing agent? So you kind of got to get crystal clear on all of those choices to be able to move forwards. Yeah, it's easier to scroll on Rightmove and it's easier to call brokers, but they're not really the first things that you should be doing if you want to grow your portfolio from outside of the UK. You need to make those really intentional other choices first. Because there's so, you know, we all know here, right? There's so many ways to make property, to make money from property. It can be really, really distracting. And, you know, scrolling Rightmove, we can just have all these ideas. Oh, I could do that here. I could do that there. And yeah, so this is why getting ultra confident and fixing yourself and making the decision and almost creating your roadmap is one of the first most important things you should be doing, rather than, you know, looking at Rightmove or even, you know, speaking to brokers and things like that. So a lot of the ways to make those decisions, it's an information gathering exercise, really. You know, you can read books, you can listen to podcasts, you can, you know, there's all manner of weekends you can go to, week-long events, day-long events, online courses. But whatever your preferred way of acquiring knowledge is, which might be affected by your freedom choice, you need to acquire that knowledge. And this doesn't change, really, I found, you know, as you progress through, you know, through your property knowledge and you do more projects, there's always things that you don't necessarily know about. Or that you want to learn. So for an example here is, for a long term, I put off and chose to keep outside of my property business going for planning permission. I just, like, first of all, it kind of scared me a bit, like planning permission. Everyone complains about it. And secondly, it was a complexity that I just felt if it came in, it can, you know, there can be lots of things that can go wrong. It can affect timescales. So to keep my business simple, I intentionally chose projects that didn't need planning permission. And I think it was 2020, I just kind of like realised, look, you know, this was like the next maybe step that I wanted to take and incorporate it into some projects, but I didn't have the knowledge. And because time freedom is one of my most important freedom, as well as location freedom, I chose to acquire that knowledge through mentoring. And Tom, you and Chris were fantastic. It was a really, really special capsule of time that you know, helped me upskill basically and really understand and get ultra confident in just going for planning and doing projects with planning. And I'm really, really grateful for that time. I think back to it so often. I don't think I really told you this. So the thing here is, this second point, is getting ultra confident in what it is you're doing and making those decisions. And if you can do that, you can move forwards with confidence in spite of the miles. And it might also mean that, you know, you then spot other opportunities that you can then move forward on that you in future that you maybe wouldn't have known about if you wouldn't have taken the time to do that. So my third bear trap is it's beliefs and assumptions. And these can be, I suppose that the statement here is, if you think you can or you think you can't, then you're right. I don't know who said that. If anyone knows who said that, please let me know in the comments. I'm sure there's someone famous who said that. But it really is true. You know, we can tell ourselves that we can't do things. We can tell ourselves that it's not possible. Henry Ford, super. Cheers, Sam. Henry Ford said that. Love Henry Ford. So we can tell ourselves that things aren't possible. Like, you know, oh, I can't grow my property portfolio from outside the UK. I have to do my own viewing. Or there can be things that other people tell us, right? You know, I've had brokers say to me, oh, you can't get a mortgage as an expat stay-at-home mum. Like, send your husband in, you're never going to get a mortgage. Or I've had people, you know, financial advisors say to me, oh, you know, the only thing you can buy as an expat is a new build-off plan. That's the only thing you can buy. And I'm just gonna pause here. And for people listening on the podcast, recorded, I mean, just like pause the podcast here and just have a think about some of the assumptions or beliefs that that you have about being overseas and growing a portfolio, and just write those down. And for the people actually live on the podcast, if you've got any assumptions or beliefs, then drop them into the chat. Because what I find is, and this is something that I cover in I run a free mini series a couple of times a year where I, you know, help people make the choices for how they want to grow their property portfolio from outside the UK. And we do spend a bit of time looking at assumptions and beliefs. And what we find is when people start sharing these assumptions and beliefs about why they can't do it, they're actually all very similar. It's like, oh, I can't because, you know, I couldn't find somebody I can trust, or I can't because I can't get a mortgage. And these are all, you know, when you can see that other people have the same things that they think are holding them back, we can kind of realize, well, actually, we don't need to let these things hold us back. So how can we get over this? First of all, it is shining a light on what our assumptions and beliefs are that are stopping us from growing the portfolio from overseas or from buying a property without flying back to the UK. So writing them down or drop them in the chat here. And take stock of what things you're telling yourself and what things other people tell you. Like, I, you know, so many times I've heard people say to me, oh, you don't want to buy a house there, that's not a great area, or, you know, things like this. And then rather than saying, I can't because of whatever that reason is, then say, well, how can I? Just like change the sentence in your own mind and even write it down. Just say, well, how can I? And, you know, maybe you might say it's a bit woo, but we can then find, it's funny how just like when we ask a different question in our mind and frame it as how can I rather than why can't I, then just some different ideas come to us. I've just seen somebody saying here, one of the assumptions they've got is that I can't find a deal. And yeah, you know, so I guess my question there for you, Sam, would be, you know, how can I find a deal? And think about it that way. One of my other mentees who I worked with this year, Darcelle, I think she was on the meeting a few minutes ago, actually, on the live. She's, you know, she works full time. She's got a really high demanding job in Dubai. And yet she's found a way to make this work. And in her own words, she's gone from feeling unconfident to doing the Rocky Dance. Last time I heard, she had two properties that she'd secured from outside the UK while she has to do a lot of travel with her work. And she's now screening her portfolio in a way that works for her alongside her day job. So what if you let go of your assumptions and your beliefs and things that are holding you back? Well, you can just become free, really, to grow the portfolio that you want in a way that you want that fits with your life. And there's no right or wrong here. Like, we can tell ourselves we can't do something, or we can tell ourselves that we can do something. The fourth one, I think I'm on four. Now this was suggested to me, or Mandy Peden actually specifically asked me to cover this one. So that this is for you, Mandy. And this is Mandy, by the way, for anyone who's in Dubai, she runs a really cool casual meetup once a month. So if anyone wants details of that, send me a message and I can connect you. But we need to create a bubble for ourselves. And I found this really, really helpful whilst living in Abu Dhabi. And it's been even more important whilst we've been more traveling. And it's, you know, we clean our teeth every day. We get dressed every day. These are things that we do that we do every day because we have to. So how can we like build into our everyday, focusing on our goals? And I found that if we can't, the bear trap is, if you can't find a way to create a bubble every day to focus on your goals, then you're not going to make progress. You know, we all know this. It isn't anything revolutionary, I'm sure. And there's so many ways to do this as well. I know when Mike Stenhouse was on the other week, Tom, he was talking about like you're having a 90-day sprint sort of approach, which is brilliant. Personally, I know that's not something that works for me, but there are so many different ways of doing it. And to avoid the bear trap here, you really need to find a system or a way of working that gives you time to focus on your goals and that allows you to just have some sort of routine in your or structure around your day to day. I personally really lean towards the miracle morning type of approach, which is like gives you a framework to every day. And during COVID, when the kids were at home and obviously, and we're still trying, you know, still have property stuff to move forward, I credit the Miracle Morning by Hal Elrod. It's a book, kind of like kept me sane, really. We have this framework every day of things to do. I can't remember the acronym now, but it's something like, you know, write down things you're grateful for, some affirmations, like, you know, look at your goals. Yes, that's it. Do some exercise. And I've like built in some other things about that as well. So, you know, we also make sure we do a bit of learning every day, you know, with the kids. And also that I look at my goals every day and choose two or three steps that move me forwards towards those goals. And I do that first before I do everything else. And there's almost like this whole important and urgent trade-off, right? And I think as a society, we kind of I don't know. I know I used to do this. I used to do that urgent things first. Like, you know, somebody's asked me for this information, I must send it to them. Somebody, you know, wants me to do this, I must do it for them. But doing all that kind of stuff first doesn't move you towards your goals. It's doing things for other people. And then, but because that was the way I used to do things, it was always like the end of the day when I'd be spending time on my goals and I'd be too tired and I would just never end up doing anything. So when I flipped it around, and then, you know, I look at my goals each day and I choose one or two tasks to move me forwards towards my goals. It could be just calling a broker. It could be sending an email to follow up on somebody who's not got back to me on something. But it's all micro steps forwards, really. And this is the one of the books that really sort of solidifies this for me, I suppose, is The Slight Edge by Jeff Olson, I think it is. And that's like the 1% principle, you know, just improve 1% every day, or just take, you know, a 1% extra action every day. And over the course of a year, you'll have made huge progress. So this one, you know, find a way of giving your goals some focus every day and just, you know, be disciplined and stick it to it. That's one. When I figured that out, a way that worked for me, it made a really, really big difference. And the last bear trap is blaming being overseas for things going wrong, whether you yourself do it or whether or not you let other people do it. You know, whether it's a contractor or a supplier saying to you, "Oh, well, the reason why I couldn't do this is because you're overseas. You're not contactable. It's because you're overseas." And you know, I think you probably heard me say before, I remember saying it in the last podcast from 2001, the way that I run my business and organise things, I'd do it the same if I was in the UK versus being anywhere in the world. So like one of my principles is that I don't want the phone to ring because I'm with my kids. I'm doing other things. Like I can't take a call and really help the person who I'm speaking to if they're called in an ad hoc time. So My phone gets answered by a call answering service. I have scheduled time when I make phone calls or when I return phone calls. So if someone, you know, it's an easy out, I think, for either us ourselves to blame us being overseas on things going wrong, or for other people to use that. And it just shouldn't be the case, and it just isn't true, I found. Being overseas is actually our superpower. It really, really is. It forces us to find ways of working and systemize from the start, whereas people who are in the UK can do everything themselves, and they've got to systemize afterwards. They've almost got two steps to take. But being outside the UK, we actually can, we're systemizing our business from the very start. So it's our superpower. So never let anybody tell you that being outside of the UK is the cause of a problem. And please never believe that yourself. And it is a habit, you know, because it can be an assumption or a belief that we can tell ourselves. But that's something that when I like rewired my brain, I suppose, to believe that, then things became a bit more straightforward. And if I did have somebody who would regularly try and blame me being out of the country for things not working out, then they probably weren't somebody who I was best to work with, because not everyone gets that you're outside of the UK, and that's all right. It just, and if that's the case, it just means that you need to find somebody else to do that task, that role, or whatever it is. So they're my five bear traps, I suppose, to avoid. And you know, if you take one thing away, really just remember it is that if you think you can or you think you can't, then you're right. I kind of share a bit more about what it's like growing the portfolio in the UK from out of the UK. And I've written a short document on the three simple steps to freedom, basically, is what it's called. So if you want to grab that, and I think Tom will probably share the link, but if you want to grab it now, there's a little bit.ly code, which I think is https://bit.ly/ three simple steps to freedom with a number three, not a letter three. And that's me. I hope that was helpful.
Thanks so much, Julie. It was powerful stuff. I've decided that I can't.
But you are overseas. You're like on the
Oh, that's right. I already am, yeah. Oh Christ. But I still can't. So I don't know. I'm confused now. That, excellent stuff, Julie. Really enjoyed that. It's interesting because while some of that was focused on, location freedom, you know, being overseas, I think there's I think it's very relevant for people who are wherever you are, because, for example, if you've maybe got a different kind of freedom, whether it's time freedom, whatever else, whatever freedom you've got, chances are somebody will have a go at you for it, or use that as an excuse, might be a better way of saying it. And so whatever it is, it's an interesting one to make a decision. Like, I'm not standing for that. I'm not having that. I'm not having that as an excuse, because it doesn't work, and it doesn't fit with what I want to do. So so I think you can, for location freedom, you can read any kind of freedom. Okay. Yeah. We've got bits in the chat, and obviously, as usual, anyone got any questions, let them in the chat. We'll get through as many as we can. I was nodding away while you were talking about the financial freedom, the fact you don't have to have it first. A bit like you, I'd convinced myself that you needed to get rich first, and then, rich is maybe the wrong word, but it's simple anyway, people can understand it. You have financial freedom before you were then able to move around a bit more, and eventually decided, well, that's not working out, so I better start moving before that happens. And so, yeah, for the last year or so, me and the wife have been moving around a little bit more, probably not as much as Julie, but been enjoying being around. Funny thing happened to me, and I'd be interested to know if this happened to Julie, was when I started to move around, what I then started to think was, just before I started to move around, then started to think to myself, oh, well, we'll go once I've done this, once this system or process is perfect. And then I realized that once I'd done that, my brain went, but you're also going to need this. And I realized what it was my brain, kind of the fear aspect, the fear side of it coming in and making it so that I was never really going to go. So on that day I went, right, well, we're not having this. So I'm right, we'll just put a date in the diary and then we'll go, and then we'll worry about it after that. And that really worked for us. My point being, if anyone was listening and thinking, you know, oh, well, we'll go once this has happened, let me tell you, that's never going to happen. Whatever it is, that's a sort of a straw man or woman, and forget it, just go. And as Julie was talking about, in my opinion, my experience, you'll then be better. I think I've been better in the last year whilst I've been away because I've been more focused. I wrote in my notes, as Julie was speaking, that dripping taps and annoying tenants and deals that aren't going through as you'd hope and all this seem a lot, in my opinion, a lot easier to deal with in many ways when you're 3,000 miles away, because you've got that perspective of like, oh, well, but it's still sunny and I'm going to have a croissant and and then maybe this won't seem so bad. I'm not sure any of this is a question, and I'm pretty sure my job is to ask questions, so I may have failed here, but I wonder what your thoughts on any of that, what any of that is.
Yeah, and something that I find really curious is once you know, if people go the financial freedom first route, once you've got financial freedom, if you then want to go for location freedom, then it's a transition. So whatever you've done to get your financial freedom, you've got to do something different then to be able to go and travel or spend a lot of time with everybody.
Yeah.
And you can sort of get stuck in that whole, you know, being busy almost. Like it's a transition to living with location freedom and time freedom first, and like going with a slower pace of life, like a different pace of life to what we're all used to from like school and work and 9 to 5 and things like that. And it can be a bit unnerving at first when your whole day and your whole week and your whole month is totally for you. But like you say, then you can explore, you can exercise in the morning, you can climb a mountain or something like that, and then handle property stuff in the afternoon. It's been fascinating. The amount of people, fascinating is probably the wrong word, but I've had quite a few people say to me, oh, you know, you live in the dream. And they've been quite, you know, wealthy or like had great jobs and, you know, things like that. And I'm like, well, you can do the same. You literally, you know, resign and book a flight, especially, you know, if it's people who've got, I've spoken to some property people who've been amazingly successful and have got really significant portfolios, and they're saying living the dream. And I've been like, well, if you want to do this, why are you carrying on that track and not looking to do things differently? So yeah, if you've got that itch, if you've got the location freedom itch, exactly like you said, Tom, you've kind of got to jump, because once you've done it, I found, and I think you found the same, you just find a way to handle whatever problem is thrown at you.
Yeah, that's right. The transition can be tricky. Like any transition is any large change in your life. And by the way, for location freedom, means any kind of freedom you want. So your freedom might be, I want to have more time to spend with the family. I'm too busy with work, whatever. Like, so, you know, that transition probably quite a little bit tricky anyway, but I don't want to, that sounds like I'm trying to put people off, and it's quite the reverse. But our first little trip was to Santander. And I spent the first 6 days in bed because I was exhausted with the amount of prep that I tried to do. And I'd been up for 3 days straight before we left. So it's tough. I found it tough, but then is has it been worth the payoff? Yeah, absolutely it has. And the other thing, like our first trip was a month, so again, like with this whole you can leap, but you can leap and do a tiny leap, so you don't need to go and, like, you know, go to the arse end of northern Russia as your first trip and go on some walk to like the North Pole. How about you go and do, you know, a week in the Lake District, or depending where you're starting from, and then 2 weeks, you know, you can do baby steps. Or if it's like, oh, I want to spend more time with family, how about you know, you go down to 4 days a week, or, you know, whatever it might be at work. So you can do this thing. It can sound scary, but you can do it in small bursts as well. You talked about sort of turning negative beliefs and assumptions almost into more positive questions. Sort of, I think of it as opening the doors to the brain's natural creativity. If you say, I can't do X, then your brain goes, okay, well, maybe you can't, you know, so at a subconscious level. Whereas if you go, how can I do this? And then you go to sleep, your brain will work on it for 8 hours for you for free. And often you'll wake up with the answer just by changing the words in your head. We had a few in the chat, a few assumptions. You mentioned one from Sam. We also had Isu saying, assumption is that deals don't stack up, which may be similar to, you know, can't find the deal. And then Mark came in with I can't get good interest rates for mortgages when living abroad. And then one I was thinking myself was that one worry I've got at the moment is that I still self-manage my own portfolio, and he's like, how am I going to do that when there's a big time difference? Someone said the other day, how are you going to deal with those middle of the night calls? And someone else said, well, that's not going to be the problem, is it? Because for you, that's going to be middle of the day. The problem is dealing with the middle of the day calls because of the time difference that, but the middle of the night. At that point, I lost. I couldn't hold on to the conversation. I wandered off. But what are your thoughts on any of those? I think I've just frankly summarized, I failed on my job again. I basically summarized what you said, but I think it's a powerful tool.
Yeah. So if we take, I'll just go back to some of the comments. So, you know, if we take, I can't find a deal, and then I think somebody else's deals don't stack up. That's what happens whether we're in the UK or outside the UK, right? And I'm stacking up a deal, there's multiple levers to pull. We can lower the price, we can increase the rent, we can adjust our refurb budget. So it's a case of, you know, playing with the numbers until we get something that works. And if you view enough houses and, you know, play the numbers enough, then eventually you'll come to a deal that will work. Whereas if we're just looking at Rightmove, and not actively viewing and not actively, you know, I don't want to say boots on the ground because I'm obviously not boots on the ground. But if we're not actively experienced in our market, then we can find it quite hard to you know to find a deal and make it stack. Just picking up, I'm not saying anybody is not viewing, but it's, you know, there are deals to be found. You just need to persist as you would do if you're in the UK. You know, being outside the UK doesn't make that any different. In terms of the interest rates, it doesn't stack. You know. Yeah, it is more challenging for people who are overseas, whether you're expat or digital nomad, the interest rates are higher. But it, you know, it comes down to, you know, pulling your levers, like increase your rents, lower your purchase price, lower your refurb budget, add more value. It's just all about pulling the, you know, pulling the levers and just making it stack. It's part of the job of being a property investor. And if you're overseas, yes, you're going to have higher interest rates. So you just, you know, kind of got to find a way to make it work. There is no one single silver bullet answer to that, unfortunately. But you know, we can make it work, I've found. Assumptions in the chat there. But yeah, the how can I thing, like you say, now have your brain work on a problem for 8 hours for free. I love that.
Well, you're welcome. You know, maybe I should be the speaker. No, we had a bit of chat around the fourth thing you talked about, which was fourth bear trap, no less, which was around how to make sure that you focus on for at least some of the day, and maybe first on the important things rather than the urgent things, and the importance of that. There's this great story, which I'm sure most of you know, but for anyone who doesn't, is the teacher turns up at the front of a class and puts big rocks into a jar and says to the students, "Is this full?" And the students go, "Yeah, it's full." And then he proceeds to pour some small pebbles in there and says, "Is it full now?" And they go, "Well, yeah, I suppose it is." And then does the same with sand and then water, to show that while things you know, that things can appear full without being completely full, and that, like life, it's important to both have the thing full, but also to have the big stones in there, the big stones, of course, representing the things that are really important to us, and not fill your entire life with pebbles, sand, or water. So how do you do that? And Julie obviously talked about that. We've had a bit of bants in the chat. By bants, I mean useful information about how to perform the miracle morning. Sam popping in with apparently the acronym, is that the right word? Is SAVERS, SAVERS, meaning silence, affirmation, visualization, exercise, reading, and scribing. I found with those kind of things that what's really nice is you can cherry pick. So I've done similar things in the past. I don't do them so much anymore, but maybe I should get back to it. But it's like, if some of them don't work, like exercise sounds difficult, you skip that, and but you stick with the ones that work for you. I suppose the thing, Julie, that strikes me is that people can. It's about finding what works for you. Some people are night owls, so getting up at 5 in the morning, forget it, it's not happening. Might get up at 5 in the afternoon, but just it doesn't matter so much the how. What matters is that you do something, so you make sure that you're focusing on the important jobs.
Exactly, that's it. It doesn't matter. Like Mike mentioned, Mike Stenhouse, when he was talking with you the other week, mentioned the 90-day sprint, which is brilliant. And I have tried that before in my corporate work, and I don't know, just didn't. For some reason didn't work for me, but I know a lot of people get a lot of value from it. So yeah, you're exactly right. It doesn't matter how you create the focus, but it's just to make it a habit, you know. So you clean your teeth, you get dressed, you spend some time on your goals. Doesn't have to be in the morning, it could be middle of the day, it could be afternoon. It's, you know, it's whenever works for you, and then doing it consistently. And I don't want to be someone who says you've got to do it every day, because then, you know, but I sort of see it like, as I try and do all the things in my like daily disciplines, shall we say, more days than I don't. But the taking actions on my goals every day, just like one or two, just to, you know, move the needle forwards almost, is something that I try and do at least five out of every 7 days.
Yeah.
And then, you know, make progress without even realizing it, really.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that. We'll move on to answers to listeners' questions, which we've got. First one comes in from Sam, who asked the question before he'd even turned up, I think. But a good question nonetheless. He says, Julie, you mentioned having a big enough why. What's your why? How long do you think you'll be nomading, and where do you think you'll end up? Dead,
Oh, I just
presumably.
want to, yeah, I want to be my family, right? I just, want to be present for my family. I want to be exploring the world, but I want to be creating homes for people who need it. And that's kind of what we're doing. Well, what we're doing in Abu Dhabi as well, and what we're doing now. And I like them all to link in together. So yeah, being present and exploring and creating homes. No why.
There you go. Question comes in from Isu, says, I was at an event this week and one entrepreneur said you sometimes have to say enough. Do you think we'll ever come to your enough?
Yeah, that's a really good question. That I definitely will. I'm not an empire builder. I really, really enjoy what we're doing right now, which is, creating homes. We focus at the moment a lot on social and supported housing and creating homes for vulnerable adults and people who need it. And I just find that I find it a real privilege to be able to do that. Not everybody who I work with, people I've mentored do all sorts of different things. Some people do SA, some do rent to rent, some do single let. So, anything's possible from being outside of the UK. But yeah, I haven't necessarily got a number in mind. But I'm not empire building. It's more about having a lifestyle and being able to create homes for people who want to create homes for. And part of the reason for setting up our business as well was also I used to be a chair of a charity and put a lot of time into that. It was a charity that worked on social programs in Ethiopia, and I wasn't great at it. It wasn't my experience, and I kind of realized one day that I could have more impact on the charities and causes that were important to me if I focused on my own portfolio and grew my own portfolio, and they could then donate a percentage of our property income to fund charities and causes beyond my lifetime, almost, if the portfolios stays around long enough. So yeah, I haven't really answered the question there, I suppose, but I'm not an empire builder. This isn't about creating a $1 billion business or something like that. It's more about giving us a lifestyle that we want, creating homes and creating sustainable donations for the charities and programs that are important to us.
You're doing a fairly good impression of an empire builder, aren't you? Really, Christ!
I'm not.
When does an
I'm not
empire
at a desk.
become an empire?
I've not got an office or a desk.
Excellent stuff. Lovely question comes in from Andrea. I love not a lovely question. I think it's a good question, which is and Andrea, by the way, today sporting marvelous hair. It seems even longer than usual. Do you have property in other investments in other countries?
No, we don't. This was a decision that we spent a lot of time thinking about when we first moved overseas, and what I mean, it was sort of a personal decision, but what I sort of came to the conclusion of was I didn't necessarily want to own property at that time in a country where I couldn't speak the language. So we lived in the UAE at the time. I didn't really have an appetite to do that, and we sort of knew even back then, had an inkling that we were going to become nomadic and travel at some point. So I just sort of decided to consolidate and make the UK our focus. At some point in the future, who knows? We might sort of buy properties in a few different places around the world. More for practical reasons rather than for profit reasons, and maybe rent them out as well. Who knows? But for the moment, no. We've got other investments, but everything's like UK based for the moment. That's our sort of our home, should we say? Whilst we're, nomading it, that's our base.
Yes, yeah, it's a question I get a fair bit around. Would you be interested in buying properties in places you're traveling to? Like you, I might end up with some stuff, by accident, find it in a bag or whatever. But until then, I figure like the reasons why I was interested in investing in one area, namely so that I could have one power team and fewer people involved in my property business and so on, are still relevant whether I'm in Taunton or Timbuktu. So for me, a bit like you, is like, well, let's keep that economies of scale is the wrong word, but economies of geography. That's a new term.
Yeah, and something else, this is a really silly thing to say, and I almost can't believe I'm saying it, but you know, the UK Land Registry is a structure or a thing to be like grateful for. Just the, you know, the history that is behind the UK Land Registry, the security that you've got because of just because of it, like a house just can't take really get taken off you once you own it. There's just a lot of you know, weight and law around that. Whereas, you know, different countries have got different rules and things work in different ways. And I just, you know, I'm sure at some point in time it might be interesting to learn about that. But for the moment, I'm kind of quite happy and you know, have a lot of faith in the UK Land Registry, and I'm just, you know, happy to keep our investments there for the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Although it's interesting, isn't it, that real estate, which is more of an American term anyway, but comes from the term, as some of you might already know, royal estate, doesn't it? Meaning that the real estate doesn't belong to you anyway; it belongs to the bloody queen or king now, of course. And so it's all a bit. You know, as soon as there's any sort of problems, they'll nick all the properties off you anyway. But hopefully, yeah. on that moment of fear, it's probably time to end. I'd like to say a big thank you to our speaker, Julie, for attending today and speaking to us. Hope everyone's enjoyed it. And thanks, everyone, for attending. And, of course, those listening to the podcast, really appreciate it. And see you all soon.